On the record. On News Talk.
With Pinergy. Supplying energy with insight to forward-thinking Irish businesses.
Huge developments this week on the front of COVID-19. In fact, this morning, the number of people in hospitals is almost twice what it was at the springtime peak last year. There were 186 people in intensive care last night, 111 of whom are on ventilators. And there's also been some pretty significant developments this week when it comes to the rollout of the vaccine. So let's talk about all of that and more with the Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, who's with us now. Minister, good afternoon.
Gavin, good afternoon.
And thank you very much for joining me this lunchtime. First of all, can we talk about a statement that was put out by your department late last night concerning the suspension, basically, of student nurse placements? Can you explain to us exactly what you're doing there and what contribution it will make?
Yeah, sure. So the HSE have asked the Department of Health to suspend placements for first, second and third years, initially just for 2 weeks. And that's to free up experienced senior nurses. So I'm told it'll free up several hundred senior nurses. As you just covered there, the situation in the hospitals is very serious. Our hope is that it peaks in the next week or two, and then it begins to ease off. But just for the next few weeks, it frees up several hundred nurses. So we have agreed to that with the HSE.
So the idea being that these are people who would ordinarily be splitting their time between hospital duties and working as sort of lecturers or as tutors on site, and that they are now completely freed up to concentrate on frontline duties.
Yeah, not so much as lecturers, but as supervisors. They work very closely with the students. And the HSE have just said, look, given the intense pressure the system is under right now, it frees up several hundred qualified, very experienced nurses to work in the system.
Now, do I understand correctly that this is pretty much what happened in springtime as well, where to try and make sure that there was as much hospital capacity and as much staffing as possible, that similar arrangements were made where, again, the tutors were able to work without the duties of frontline teaching as well?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. Yeah, a similar call was made back in the first wave and it's being activated again.
So back in that instance, though, and this is the reason why I mentioned that, is because then the students who were suddenly taken off placements were suddenly then available for deployment by the HSE if they were desired and they were paid the healthcare assistant rate for the work that they were doing. Could we see a repeat of that this time?
Yeah, it's entirely possible. So the HSE, obviously hospital by hospital, can decide to hire a healthcare assistant at any time. They may look to hire them, to hire some of these students. The students obviously cannot be compelled under any circumstances to do that. But if the HSE individual hospitals want to do it, and of course only if the students wanted to go in as HCAs for the few weeks, there would be no issue with that.
The only reason I ask is because in the statement that your department put out last night, there was a Q&A underneath it, and it said, can student nurses be used to replace registered nurses? And it said, no, students are not qualified registered practitioners and can't be responsible for a patient caseload. Excuse me. How do you reconcile that?
Yeah, that's right. So that's specifically, can students act as qualified nurses? And the answer is no. So qualified nurses have responsibility for patient safety. They would not be coming in to augment nurses. They'd be coming in as healthcare assistants.
There is a perception among some student nurses who I saw commenting on this last night after the announcement went out that this could actually, although when intended, do more harm than good, because it might actually then remove from hospital wards for the next couple of weeks a lot of students who, I know it's the government's contention that they don't contribute to frontline medicinal duty, but a lot of them would say that that is pretty much what their rounds or their clinical placements end up involving anyway, and that by doing this, although well intentioned, you're actually removing them from the frontline and meaning that there are less bodies there to deal with it.
Well, certainly the HSE's view is that what's important is that we free up several hundred senior qualified nurses. There's no question but that students help, no question at all. They do a fantastic job. They work very, very hard when they're on their placements. Right now, the HSE's view, though, is there are a lot of nurses, hundreds of nurses, senior qualified nurses, who spend a lot of time with the students, and that right now, given the surge we have, we need them on the front line with patients.
But when you say that there's no question that students do make a contribution, was the whole rationale behind not agreeing to pay students the HCA rate for the last couple of months because, as the Taoiseach, you know, stated repeatedly in the Dáil, they're not duties that they're supposed to be doing. They're supposed to be there to observe and to learn, not to chip in.
So the view of the higher education authorities and the chief nurse and the HSE and Professor Tom Collins, who did an independent report, the view right across the board is students are students. They're not healthcare assistants. We need to protect their education. We need to protect their learning while they're on their placements. Healthcare assistants obviously don't have that learning built in, and the conclusion really right across the board was that we need to make sure that the supports are in place, the training is in place, and that they are protected as students and their learning is protected as students.
Okay, just before I move on from this, then, if there are students who now have been taken off placement or who do want to chip in at the HCA rate, how exactly will they be recruited, or is there any place that they can go?
It's a matter for the HSE. So my understanding is there may be individual hospitals who would like to do it. There will be other hospitals who probably won't. So there'll be operational local decisions put in place by the HSE.
As we mentioned at the very start, the ICU situation is pretty grave this morning. There are a total of 320 open and staffed beds. That's eating into a lot of the surge capacity that we already have. 292 of those beds are occupied. There are only 24 free as of yesterday evening. Surge capacity is obviously all well and good, and it involves having to make other arrangements. It means closing a few operating theatres or recovery wards, for example. But a lot of people would wonder, however, could anything more have been done to add permanent capacity to ICU between last April and now? Because it seems as if our baseline, before you start eating into the surge capacity, is pretty much exactly where it was 9 months ago, and maybe we could have done more in the meantime.
The HSE, to their credit, have done a huge amount of work on this. So at the start of the year, we had 255 beds. That's way, way less than we should have. I think we've got one of the lowest rates in Europe, mm-hmm. which is why we're looking to pretty much double over the next 2 years ICU. Over the current year, what they've done is they've brought us from 255 up to 285, with surge up to 350. And then what we're doing through the winter plan and then through the budget, and indeed the budget, the next budget as well, will be turning those surge capacity units into fully staffed, fully functioning permanent ICU. I don't think any more could have been asked of the HSE, really, Gavin, on this. I think they've done a very, very good job in building up that capacity in a very, very difficult year.
So when people say that the HSE could have done more to try and make sure that the excesses of this were slightly mitigated somewhat, you just don't believe there's anything else they could have done?
Well, I think they've done an awful lot. So, for example, let's go back to the first wave. Do you remember we were all very concerned about PPE? Mm. That's been sorted out. Ventilators sorted out. Oxygen sorted out. About 1,500 nurses have been trained in ICU. And remember, there's no trolley crisis this year. Now, and that's thanks to huge work, a €600 million winter plan implemented very well right across the system. And because of that, it means that the HSE can focus on the surge in ICU, the COVID surge, and they're not having to fight a war on two fronts, which would be a trolley crisis and a surge. I really think they've done an awful lot of very good work. I think they deserve great credit.
I know that there might not be a crisis by comparison to other years, but I've just pulled up the HSE stats this morning. There are 89 people on hospital trolleys at 8 a.m. this morning. 10 of them have been there for over 24 hours. It is far less than what you'd usually have in a January, but I find it difficult to describe there being almost 100 people on trolleys this morning as not being a crisis.
I don't think it is at all, Gavin. So the admissions into hospital are 90% of what they were last year, and attendances into ED are right up as well. So people are still arriving and people are still being admitted. But what we're seeing is, I think, about a 62% reduction this week on week. And what's really important for anyone who'll have got a chance to go in and see the emergency departments is what we're not looking at is... Last year, you and I would have spoken and your listeners would have heard story after story of people spending days, elderly people spending days on a trolley in corridors. That's not happening. You'll always have people in emergency who are in emergency departments who are waiting on a bed. The beds are there and the situation they're in is very, very different. So a lot of it is very appropriate individual spaces. And what they've done as well is they've separated the emergency departments between COVID and non-COVID. They really have done a lot of work. And while we are dealing with a deadly serious surge in terms of COVID, there is the fact that there are people on trolleys waiting on emergency is that there is not a trolley crisis.
But you wouldn't consider it to be a crisis that there are 20 people in the emergency department in CUH this morning. 8 of them were there overnight. 2 of them have been there for 24 hours. There are 10 in Portiuncula. There are 7 in Tullamore. There's 6 in St. Luke's and Kilkenny. There's 9 in Limerick. That's not a crisis?
No, it's not. There will always be people, no matter how many beds you have, there will always be people in emergency departments who are being admitted and who are taking a bit of time. I mean, obviously, you want the patient experience time to come down and down and down. But the focus right now, obviously, is on COVID. I think if we've had 60-70% reduction in the number of people waiting on trolleys in the midst of this huge COVID surge. I really think all credit to that, to our frontline workers for doing that. I think they deserve huge credit.
I don't know whether you got to hear my interview earlier on with Professor Stephen Froelich, who's the head of intensive care at the Beacon Hospital, but he was explaining the reason why theirs is the only hospital in the private sector that hasn't signed up to the HSE agreement. His concern is effectively that it will be a repeat of the arrangement from last spring, which would lead to the hospital being 70% empty for 3 months. And he says that the hospital is pretty much full right now. They simply can't tolerate that being again. I'm sure about 9 months ago when you were on the opposition benches, you yourself would have been relatively critical of buying out or renting a full hospital for 3 months and then leaving it largely empty. What would you respond to the Beacon?
You're right. I was highly critical of what happened last time. I don't think there's any blame because the decisions last time were obviously made in the context of this huge wave of COVID coming to our shores.
Which is now worse.
They did what they felt was necessary. There is no comparison between the contract that is being put in place with all of the other private hospitals and what was done last time. It's 15-30%. It's pay per use using the VHI figures. The private hospitals are absolutely free to continue treating their own people. What I'd say is this, Gavin, the Beacon is doing a lot of good work. Their clinicians are doing a lot of good work and they work closely with the HSE, and I think that needs to be acknowledged. We're currently using some of their beds, we're using some of their operating theatres, and we're using some of their critical care beds. So credit where credit is due.
Go ahead.
I think it would be very regrettable if they refused to sign up to the same deal that the other private hospitals are. This is a Team Ireland moment. And while they are absolutely within their rights to try and protect clinical care for their own patients, this is a moment where I believe people should step up, and I believe they should sign the same contract as everybody else.
Speaking of the Team Ireland moment, we also heard from Stephen Froelich, who said that his hospital is treating some COVID patients, that if they show up to their emergency department and they've got COVID, they're going to be treated on site. And for that reason, he was perfectly happy and perfectly satisfied that frontline healthcare workers in that hospital would be receiving the COVID-19 vaccine. But we know that the Beacon's arrangements there have come in for some criticism, not least because, as I understand it, the Beacon facility is also administering COVID vaccines to staff from Ophidia or staff from the Hermitage out in Palmerstown in Lucan, and they don't, as far as I'm aware, have any COVID-19 patients. How do you feel about there still being some private facilities where healthcare workers who aren't dealing with COVID patients are getting the vaccine ahead of others who are?
So what the Beacon did was they set up a max vaccination centre off their own bat. The HSE took a look at it. They thought it was very good. And the last time I checked in on the figures, it had been used to vaccinate over 1,000 HSE staff who otherwise would have had to go into St. James's. Mm. And St. James's is dealing with an awful lot of the COVID patients and critically ill COVID patients at the moment. The HSE is not differentiating between a nurse who works in a private hospital and a nurse who works in a public hospital.
No, but it is differentiating between those who are on the front line of treating COVID patients and those who aren't, because those who don't treat COVID patients are supposed to be in cohort 4, not in cohort 2.
So it's not just COVID patients, though. The schedule is that frontline healthcare workers who are patient-facing who are being prioritised. Now, there is a sub-breakdown of that, as you quite rightly say, and I would expect that is being followed. And if it isn't being followed, it should be followed. But certainly the criteria or the ethical approach being used is to say we're not differentiating between a nurse who works in one hospital and works in another hospital.
We would have seen the video from some of the staff in Nina who issued a public appeal on Friday morning. They say subsequently they were delivered with 40 vaccines, but there are 280 staff there, so it is only a small fraction. How can it be right that vaccines arrive because some healthcare workers have to mount a public campaign to receive it, and that there are still others, the likes of Michael's in Balls Bridge or St. John's in Limerick, who still haven't received any timetable for them receiving their own vaccines?
So we're getting the vaccines out as quickly as they're arriving in the country. So here are the numbers for next Sunday. We'll have vaccinated 140,000 people, and that's split 50-50 between frontline healthcare workers and long-term residential care. So in long-term residential care, it'll be all nursing home residents and staff. And then really importantly as well, in the mental health and the disability long-term settings, it's the residents over 65. When it comes to the frontline healthcare workers, there's about 150,000 in that cohort. It includes people in the hospitals, people in the community, GPs, and many others. So by next Sunday, we'll have had enough vaccines in the country to vaccinate just a little under half of that cohort with the first dose.
Is that notwithstanding the small depletion in Pfizer supplies for this week?
Yeah. So we're looking to see if there needs to be any slowdown. But what we have is we have a small amount left as a buffer, a sort of about a 3-day buffer that we can look to deploy. But you know what is fantastic is that we have this huge demand from our frontline workers for these vaccines.
Yeah.
Because there was, you know, there were people suggesting ahead of time that people wouldn't want the vaccines. The anti-vaxxers were, you know, trying to get their stake in. Mm. But in fact, what we're seeing right across the country is this incredible response from our frontline healthcare workers.
Yeah, and a opinion poll in the Mail on Sunday as well that says 86% of people now would be prepared to take one.
Yeah, right. There is nothing I would like more, Gavin, than there was more vaccine in the country and that there was more, you know, that the delivery schedules were more than they were, because then, you know, as I said, as we get these vaccines into the country, we are getting them into people's arms. It is simply a matter of delivery and getting as much as we can and as quickly as possible.
On that note,
straight out to the healthcare workers,
can you confirm
the nursing home.
The front page story in the Business Post today saying that you've asked to investigate whether the AstraZeneca vaccine can be brought on shore ahead of its approval in 2 weeks?
Yeah, that's right. So we're looking at an authorization for AstraZeneca. The decision will be on the 29th. Now, what I'm saying is, when we look back to Pfizer, the EMA actually at very short notice brought that that decision forward a week. Mm. So what I would like to see, if it's possible, is that we get the AstraZeneca vaccine into Ireland and ideally into all of the GP surgeries, into all of the pharmacies. So the moment the EMA and the European Commission authorise it, I then have to sign a statutory instrument that authorises it for use in Ireland, and we get vaccinating straight away. But now, it may not be possible. There are regulatory hurdles. The pharmaceutical
common EU procurement, so it might be difficult.
Yeah, right. The AstraZeneca themselves may not do it. But what I want to make sure, and I know everyone working on this procurement program wants to make sure, is that not a single day is wasted.
Final question for you, just before I let you go, because I am tight on time and I do need to get to Roderick O'Gorman as well. The Foreign Secretary, Dominic Raab, has committed this morning that every adult in the UK who wants a vaccine will be able to access one by September. Can you make a similar pledge for Ireland?
Well, certainly the provisional schedule we have would cover that. But I have to reemphasise that that is a provisional schedule based in part upon vaccines that have not yet been authorised and for which there is no agreed delivery schedule. However, what the plan we are working to is that by the end of March, we would have had first dose and in many cases second dose for about 700,000 people. That's the first three groups. It's so important because it includes all the over 70s. And then in quarter two, we would like to be able to get to about 1.8 million people. And then in quarter three, that again.
So all going well, if everything comes online, as you hope that it will, all adults by September.
With huge caveats as to the fact that these things can move, as per Pfizer moving this week out of the blue, we got a notification.
Okay.
So with huge caveats, yes.
Okay, we will leave it there. Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, thank you very much for joining us this lunchtime on The Record.